this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. Welcome to episode 65. This week we have Rachel Duff sharing her postpartum adventures on the show. And I don't want to spend too much time talking before we get into Rachel's interview because it's a longer interview. So I don't want to take up, you know, any more time than we need to. For those of you who don't know, who don't listen to too many podcasts, you can increase the speed that you listen to a podcast. So if you're trying to listen to this during your commute, if you listen to it at double speed, you'll be done in, you know, in an hour. But I, you know, I'm really glad that Rachel's on the show and that she took the time to really dig into the issues because, I mean, just a checklist, we are going to be talking about major trigger warnings, miscarriage, an emergency C-section, a vaginal birth after C-section, some money issues. Rachel is a single mom and she has two little kids, a two-year-old and a nine-month-old, Rosalie and Sebastian, and she we're going to talk about her on-again, off-again relationship with her ex-fiance, breastfeeding issues, and towards the very end, she will talk about self-harming and when she had postpartum depression with her nine-month-old baby right now, she was cutting. So a lot of stuff is being discussed today, and Rachel and I talked about whether we wanted to try to like edit down her episode, but I just, my gut, my intuition told me to just get the whole story out there because these stories need to be shared and there is someone out there who desperately needed this whole unedited story. And also, you know, I worry about like, oh, someone on a commute, but no, I'm doing this show. When I first thought of this show, I was thinking of the mom who's awake at 2 a.m. and can't sleep. And so for that mom, that's why this episode's going up. And that's why every episode is going up. So, you know, we don't worry about always hitting a certain time mark. So if your stories are complicated and you have more to share, it's beautiful. And I'm so glad Rachel was just so honest and authentic and shared so much of her journey with us. But before I turn it over to Rachel, I just wanted to let you know, exciting news, I published my book last week. It's only available on Amazon as an ebook right now. I'm hoping in the next week that the paperback version will be up. And I am working on getting it on iBooks and a couple other platforms, but really Amazon is the easiest. So I went with them and it was like a 5-minute process and then the book was available less than 24 hours later. So if you hop onto Amazon now and search Adventures with Postpartum Depression, you will see my ebook and I'm there with an author profile and I feel very snazzy. And if you head over, I will eventually, and not eventually, I will very soon be sharing the links for a free copy of the ebook. So head over to the website, ppdadventures.com, and sign up for the newsletter, and you will be sure to get the link for the free ebook when I get that out. But for now, I'm going to turn it over to Rachel, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, Rachel. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And, you know, I told you before we started that Rachel's my middle name, so I try not to be biased and like any of my guests more than anyone else, but you know, I have a special love for anyone with the name Rachel.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, that makes me feel like.
So I know a lot about your story. Well, I know the big points, but I don't know the details. Where do you think is the place that makes the most sense to start telling it?
I guess probably back. I mean, I guess if you go all the way back until when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of when I guess the whole. When I was first diagnosed with depression and everything, I had a kind of, there were some life family issues going on, and I ended up hospitalized because I went in and told my counselor I was going to go home, and I told them my plan, basically, to end it all. And so that landed me a week in a psychiatric unit, which did more harm than good. But after that, it was kind of just maintaining the depression and anxiety with medication for the next, I guess, 2 years, I think. So I kind of always have struggled with that. And then, yeah, over into my pregnancy with my, or I guess, my pregnancy with my first Earthside baby, Rosalie, kind of carried over into her pregnancy, and I actually stopped my medication the first trimester because I felt fine, like, for, like, months. It was the first time I actually felt okay, so they gave me the go-ahead, and so I thought everything was going to be fine, you know? You always think that, oh, I'm off, it's fine, it'll never happen again. So, yeah, that's naive thinking right there. So, yeah, I kind of always struggled with that, and I had, I guess, I had a miscarriage in August of 2014, so that hit pretty hard, and then I got pregnant with my daughter in January of 2015, so I had a longer mourning process, I guess you could say, but it was still kind of always in the back of my head,
mm-hmm.
And then my pregnancy with my daughter, I was with my then fiance, and our relationship was going downhill, and I knew there was something going on, but it didn't come to light until I was, well, I guess I had my suspicions, but when I was 14 weeks, I ended up in the emergency room, because I was having contractions, like regular contractions. So they gave me medicine to stop that, and everything was fine. And then 16 weeks, I was up at my parents', and I was in the bathroom, and my water broke. Like, I knew, like, it was just that subconscious kind of like, this is not normal. So went to the hospital, stayed there, and that was kind of the beginning, I guess, of looking back. I didn't realize it at the time, but that was, like, the beginning of everything. You know, because they looked at me and told me basically, they came out and told me, your baby's going to die, kind of deal. And no mom should ever have to hear that, you know. But they tried everything and it worked because obviously she's here. But in the moment, it was just really stressful. It turned out my water had broke because, let's just say, my ex has strayed. And went along and sowed his seeds elsewhere. So that created issues with me. And I guess stress wise, everything.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's necessary or not, there, but yeah. But yeah, so that was really stressful. And then I ended up in the hospital again with her at 24 weeks because I was in labor and it was a whole big mess. So, needless to say, her pregnancy, I guess, short story, is really a mess, and just emotional, and just a lot of health problems for both of us.
How do they, so when your water breaks at 16 weeks, what do they do?
There's really nothing they can do. I guess, the way they describe it to me is there's, like, two layers of the amniotic sac,
mm-hmm.
And it can reseal itself, so, like, my water broke, but because I guess that first layer broke, I guess that second layer didn't break all the way through,
mm-hmm.
So it resealed itself, and so I had, I mean, we created issues because it was only that one layer instead of the two. I always had dangerously kind of low fluid the whole pregnancy, which, of course, is not okay, but yeah, it kind of just, I guess, I didn't know it could do that, reseal itself. That's how they told me. Like, it's kind of just like it puts a patch over the hole.
No, I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Were you on bed rest after that, or were you able to go about life?
I was on bed rest for a week after the first time, it was 16 weeks. I was on bed rest for a week. And then I went in and everything checked out okay. Like, you know, she had fluid in there, so they're like, okay, you can go about your business. And then after the 24-week hospitalization, they were like, yeah, you kind of just need to stay home, and we're not going to put you on strict bed rest, because I wasn't leaking fluid. So they're like, yeah, you just kind of need to not do much of anything other than walk around your own house.
So, that makes sense.
It wasn't quite strict bed rest, but it was still kind of like prison-y feeling.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was quite the adventure with her.
And this was your second pregnancy?
Yes, this was my second pregnancy, yes.
How far along was the first one when you lost your baby?
They estimate 6 or 7 weeks.
Okay. And that's, I don't love hearing that that happened to you, but I'm glad you're able to share that because you named that baby. And I think a lot of moms are just told to, like, at 6 to 7 weeks, you're told to just get over it. And it's still your baby.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one thing that it was, like, I didn't even know. Like, I had my suspicions because I had started crying at work randomly. Like, I just completely broke down one day at work. I'm like, this is not normal. But I didn't think to even test until I thought I was having appendicitis. Like, the pain was that bad. I thought I was dying. And I didn't start actually, like, the process of miscarrying until, I think it was, I went into the hospital that Friday and Saturday. And I didn't start the process until Saturday night. And, you know, because I guess, yeah, it was weird, however it was. But, yeah, it was not fun.
Were people in your life, yeah, like, supportive of helping you grieve that? Or was that something that was kind of supposed to be swept away?
At the time, so I am Catholic. So growing up Catholic, you know, we have rules in place and expectations, specifically about the premarital sex kind of deal. So my parents didn't even know that I was frolicking about. we really didn't tell anybody. I told a couple of my coworkers because they were, they could kind of help, I guess, like, well, they were in charge of me kind of, but not my boss. So they were the ones who were kind of like, okay, well, we'll just let her go home early this day. You know, if I was having a tough day, and they didn't have to give a reason why, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't share very much. I did end up, I think about a month later, sharing with my ex's mom. Again, we were together up until just recently. My then fiance, I guess, his mom, because she's had, gosh, a lot. She has a lot of angel babies. So I was like, I reached out to her because I'm like, she can help me do this. Like, she can help me navigate, you know. She knows how to deal with this. So she was supportive. She was, you know, she wasn't angry at all. Mm-hmm. I just remember her being really supportive, really loving, and just very, you know, understanding about the whole thing. So I did have a little bit of support, but it just felt kind of like the scarlet letter that nobody could see.
Right.
I don't know if that makes any sense. Like I said, only really one person really knew, but it was still just this kind of hidden shame.
No, I think, like, I never had a miscarriage, so, for which I feel really lucky because they're so common, but I know so many moms and have, like, a mom in my area recently is trying to start a miscarriage support group because it's just such a powerful experience, and I know you're not supposed to really talk about it much.
Yeah, that was kind of the vibe that I get from people. Like, when I do share, it makes them uncomfortable. But it's like, this is part of who I am. Like, this is, I mean, each miscarriage that I have, like, defines me, you know, and they're a part of my story. Like, they're still my little babies, even though they're not here with me. So, I don't have an issue with sharing, but.
And her name was Anne Marie. When did you name her?
Gosh. I think it was about, I want to say it was like a week later. Her dad and I went up to our church, and it was just kind of like, we need to pray this out, you know, because, like, I couldn't, you know, I was not processing it very well. So we went up there, and we came out about an hour later, and we went in the car, and it was like, he actually suggested it. He's like, I think we should name her. I was like, oh, okay, all right. And then he actually picked out our name, and it was just, like, perfect, so.
Mm.
And we didn't know whether it was a boy or a girl, but, you know, we just kind of had this feeling that it was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we kind of, yeah, leaned that way. I don't know. Like I said, we didn't know, but.
No, no. Yeah. I'm glad you're sharing this. So then we fast forward to your next pregnancy. And this is your 2-year-old Rosalie.
Yes.
So you get sent home after the 24 weeks when you're having contractions. What happens then? Like, how much longer till you give birth, and how do things go?
Here's the irony in this. They told me that I would not go past 34 weeks. They said there is no way you will go past 34 weeks. So we scheduled the baby shower early. My mom and my grandma and a family friend, they put on this amazing Winnie the Pooh themed baby shower. And I just have to point out, like, my brother made this gigantic Winnie the Pooh balloon. Like, it was as tall as, like, our 9-foot ceiling. Like, he did it with PC piping and pool noodles. So it was just, I mean, everybody kind of rallied together, and, you know, everybody was there to support me, so that was really nice. But yeah, I just have to point that out. So, yeah, they told me I wouldn't go past 34 weeks. So 34 weeks rolls around, and I start, you know, kind of, like, panicking a little bit, like, oh my gosh, it's going to be any day. Well, 6 weeks and 5 days later. it was just like, she was trying to come early and then wouldn't come at all. So they did end up inducing me, which kind of came as a shock. I had wanted to do things as naturally as possible, just because I'm kind of a big wuss when it comes to pain anyway. But I'm more afraid of hospitals. Mm-hmm. So, and medical stuff. And that goes back to my hospitalization for my suicide thing, because I was horribly violated when I was there. So fear comes from that. But yeah, so they came in when I was 38 weeks and said, because your water broke, we need to induce you. So we scheduled the induction, and they're like, but, you know, again, you won't make it until then. Well, no, I made it. so, yeah, we went in, I think it was 40 in 3 or 4 days. I can't remember. But we went in on October 15th to be induced. And again, my, I guess, baby daddy, he took me in because we were on pretty good terms at this point. You know, we had kind of moved past whatever. So I was okay with having him there. Also because then it's really just foolish and stupid. so, yeah. And everything was going okay until they broke my water. So I was in labor for a total of 18 hours. 12 hours of that was unmedicated. Well, I guess not epidural, medicated. And then they broke my water, and everything just spiraled out of control. It wasn't coping well. I was freaking out. And that caused trauma, you know, just myself. Like, I caused my own trauma. This part, because I was screaming and just losing control. So, yeah. And I stopped dilating at this point. And I was stuck at a 7. And I continued to be stuck at a 7 until midnight when my daughter went into distress. I went into distress. And they said, oh, we're doing an emergency C-section and we'll be in. And that was that. so, yeah. And, of course, the, you know, one segment in the book that I didn't read was about the C-sections, because, you know, I'll never have one of those.
Right.
Well, that was, and I'm the person who, I read every single book in our library. I need to know all the information. You know, I'm kind of a little bit of type A personality. I need to know all the information. I need to have everything planned out. So, naturally, I didn't, you know anything about this. So, yeah, and the reaction to the medications, it was almost like I was seizing. I was shaking so hard. They had to strap my entire body down to the surgery board or whatever. Like, I mean, it was bad. So, yeah. And that kind of started everything with my anxiety with her.
Mm-hmm.
Right after she was born, I would not put her down. I wouldn't let anybody hold her. Like I said, I didn't realize looking back that that's what I had. Is I probably did have postpartum anxiety with her. Because I was so worried if I put her down, like, even just set her down, that she would stop breathing and die. Like, I was convinced that if I put her down, she would stop breathing and die. That was the first time, well, I thought that was normal thinking, you know, oh, I just love her so much, I don't want to put her down, you know?
Right.
That makes sense. But then, you know, I think a big red flag for me was when I did not want to put her in the car. Because I was freaking out. I was fighting people over this. I'm like, you can't go in the car because someone will hit the car and kill her. But again, I didn't think anything was really, really wrong at this point. I'm like, oh, you know, again, first time mom, just nervous. And that's what everybody told me, too. Because, oh, you're just feeling this way because you're just a first time mom. Okay, but my guilty pleasure is Grey's Anatomy. so I tried to watch that, and I had a full-blown panic attack as soon as they wheeled somebody into the OR. And I couldn't come down off that. And they told me that I had not technically post-traumatic stress disorder, but, like, I had a kind of I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, it wasn't, you know, severe, but it was enough that I was having nightmares and panic attacks, and I couldn't watch anything that had to do with hospitals or, you know, anything, because it would just freak me out. So, yeah. And again, I was uneducated at that point, so I didn't know that I should probably be seeking help, other than, you know, I just went to check in with my counselor just to see what was going on. And she didn't catch it either, because, you know, I felt fine.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, so that was that with her thing. And then never really went down that. You know, the anxiety and everything went away really pretty quick. Even the, I went back to work at 4 months postpartum with her, and I really didn't have a problem leaving her. Because we lived with my parents at the time, so my parents were like, oh, we'll just watch her while you go to work. And I work third shift in a medical lab, so I would go in at 6:30 in the evening, and I get off at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it just made sense for them to watch her, since that was our home anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that helped the leaving and going to work factor. I don't know. But, yeah, I never really had any major issues with her. So
you kind of you had that initial intense anxiety, like, during that first week or so. But then it just kind of resolved itself and went away quickly.
Yeah, I would say by the time I went back to work. But I would say for sure by the end of January, it was, like, basically non-existent.
And at this point, what was your status with your ex-fiancé? Were you guys still together?
At that point, I had called it off after I found out that he had cheated on me. 2 months after he proposed, so that, you know, added to that stress. But 2 months, so that was in December when so I had broken up with him, I think, in June of that year, of 2015. So we were broken up, but we did kind of, like, we're like, okay, well, we're going to co-parent, you know, so we kind of should probably be on better terms with each other. So we were just kind of, like, friends, I guess. Like, you know, that was kind of we just went back to being friends. We just fell into that kind of naturally. So it wasn't bad, but it also wasn't good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, yeah, I don't know, I guess I had expected different things of him, and, you know, expectations weren't met, and then, so they were fine up until, she was about 6 months old, when, to put it bluntly, shit hit the fan, and I, you know, was like, well, you never around, so, you know, I kind of just, you know, I don't know, I don't even know what exactly happened at that point, but, you know, we just butted heads, and, you know, that was that. So he still, you know, is around, obviously. And he's the father of my second child as well. So obviously we're on pretty good terms leading up to that. So you learn from your mistakes, you know? Listen to people when they tell you not to do something. You'll learn. Some people it takes one time, some people it takes two times, some people it takes two babies. It's fine, you'll learn eventually. Yeah, oh, goodness, but yeah. So we were on pretty decent terms, I guess, when she was born and up until she was about 6 months.
Okay, so then how were things between then and your next pregnancy?
Let's see. So I got pregnant. We estimate that I got pregnant basically the week of my daughter's first birthday, because how the due date rolled around and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere around October-ish, middle of October. So between April and October, it was okay. So we kind of mended our little differences. And then over the summer, I don't even know what happened. I got hit with the most severe rage and bout of baby fever that anybody has ever had ever. I was just like, I want another baby right now. I don't even know why. Couldn't tell you why. Just all of a sudden, that was what, you know, I wanted. And we were, you know, after that, you know, we really kind of, he seemed to be coming around, and it made sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
To have a baby with the guy that had issues with previously. That's not going to cause problems at all.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. So we started actively trying, which, again, we didn't tell our parents this. We kind of just told them it was an oops. But, you know, we had always wanted two kids closer together. And things are going okay by our standards. So we actually started trying, I would say, in August, I think, of 2016. Yes, August 2016. So then, leading up to getting pregnant with my son, I noticed in September that I was 11 days late, and I am always very punctual. My cycles are very punctual. And so I took pregnancy test after pregnancy test, and the first one I got, it wasn't positive, but it was like the faintest line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it almost looked like an EVAP line. And so I was just like, oh, well, it's just a faulty test. But looking back, because I took pictures of them, it got fainter and fainter the more I took. And that was when I called my OBGYN. I was like, hey, I think I'm pregnant. I'm 11 days late. I don't know. So they did stat blood work. They did my HCG, progesterone, all that good stuff. And they called me back the next day, and they're like, yeah. They're like, yeah, it looks like you are, you know, but it also looks like, I guess you did it a couple times, like my HCG was going down.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, yeah, you're basically having, what's they call it, a chemical pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
I guess?
Yeah, a chemical miscarriage.
Okay, yeah, that was what they called it. But it was still, like, devastating. Like,
right.
I was like, well, you know, I don't know. It was just,
Well, you wanted a baby.
Right, yeah. We really did. And October 1st, I remember this, like, with such clarity. I was cleaning, we were cleaning the house, because you're having people over the next day. And I was cleaning in my mom's vanity, and she has all these little trinkets. And I remember being so agitated, because I just wasn't feeling well. And I forgot what it's like to kind of go through that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense, my agitation. And then when I went to Athens, because, you know, I started like being, oh, hey, I need to go and like remove myself a little bit. it was kind of, not to get too TMI, but from what I saw, it looked like there were two little egg sac deals. Like, I don't know. And
that's
all the, yeah, this is gross.
Okay. No, there is no such thing as TMI on this show. Like, it's called postpartum depression. If people, like, anyone who is afraid of TMI, they just never even joined this boat. So you're okay.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. That was just so clever. Yeah, there were, like, two little sacks of, I guess, what would have been babies.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went in to see my OB, I guess it was that next week, and I described it to her. She's like, yeah, it could have been twins, you know, but, you know, you just never know. So that was, you know, kind of, that was devastating. Like, that one was even harder than my first, I think, because the first one, we weren't expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, you know, you really did want, even though we weren't at the best place in life, it was like, you really did still want a baby, you know, and I don't know.
Life is messy. Life is beautifully messy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, what is the best time to have a baby anyway? There really is no optimal time, because they just choose when they want to anyway. And it's going to kind of be inconvenient sometimes.
Right.
The way it goes. They go past their due date, or they come early, or, you know, it's just never perfect timing.
Right.
So, yeah. So after that, I went into a depression. It started affecting my work. And I actually had to tell my boss, because she's like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? So I was like, oh boy. You know, she's like, I noticed your numbers are down, you know, what's going on, kind of deal. And I told her, I said, hey, you know, I just had a miscarriage. I'm sorry that my numbers are down. And, you know, she's like, okay. So she was really understanding, you know. She said, I've never gone through that before, but, you know, I know that's not fun, because I guess she's had friends or family who've gone through it. She said, so, you know, she was really understanding and supportive, so that was nice. So when I would just start randomly crying at my desk, nobody questioned it. It's just kind of like, everybody, you just, you know, Rachel's going through something, just, you know, let her be. So, yeah. And then, it's just 2 weeks later, because I didn't know that this could happen, but I guess sometimes after a miscarriage, this is what my OB told me anyway, your body can, like, hyperovulate or something. I don't know. This is what I was told.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it tries to, like, compensate for what lost. I don't exactly know. Well, needless to say, it was about 2 weeks later, I think, is when we got pregnant with my son.
Yeah, when you sent me their names and the baby's ages, it took me, I think, like 2 minutes to, like, you're like, okay, my son is this age and the twins would have been this age. I'm like, wait, what? Like, it just took me a while to wrap my mind around it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. I know that was kind of confusing. Yeah. It was just, yeah. I didn't, like I said, I didn't even know that could happen because I thought you had to wait so many months. And I guess I do recommend it. But, you know, in my grief, I was just like, well, let's try right now. I feel fine. And I probably shouldn't have, but oh well.
Well, what I just read in a book yesterday was that they recommend waiting a month just so that they know when your period is so that they can get a better handle on the due date.
Yeah.
But yeah. With ultrasounds, they kind of know the due date anyway. So, you know.
Yes, they do. And that's, you know, and yeah. Looking back, based on what happened when I did find out that I was pregnant with my son, Sebastian, when I went into my OB, I was supposed to be almost 7 weeks, and he was measuring 5.5 weeks. And so, you know, again, but it was because of the miscarriage, they didn't know exactly how to calculate it.
Right.
But again, they told me, well, my OB, she was very blunt. Her bedside manner was not the best anyway. But she's like, yeah, and she's filling out paperwork. She's like, oh, yeah, since your ultrasound looks that way, you should expect a miscarriage in the next week. But what? So that was its own stressor. But it turned out, you know, that obviously because of the miscarriage, we just miscalculated everything, and he was fine.
Right.
But, you know, which I don't even know why she didn't call. Oh, my goodness, bedside manner was not the best. Anyway.
You know, I swear to God, I've heard about such lousy bedside manner from so many guests. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, yeah, mm-hmm. It's awesome. But, yeah, so, yeah, we found out we were pregnant with Sebastian in early November. I think it was, like, the 5th of November or something. So, and that started the whole big ordeal, I guess you could call it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and so everything basically went fine with his pregnancy.
I'm here.
Okay. I thought you said something. Sorry.
Don't worry. I moved my foot, so maybe, like, when it scratched on the chair, it sounded like a conversation.
Okay, maybe. I don't know, yeah. I'm a little bit nervous and still a little bit frazzled, so, oh, goodness, but yeah. So,
it's a lot. Like, when you tell the story out loud for the first time in all of its detail, I mean, it's just a whole, like, even if you've written it before or if you've told pieces, it's just a whole new way, like, that you process it.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah, okay. All right, so yeah. Anyway, back to Sebastian. So when I was 6 weeks, I was at work, started bleeding, ended up going to the ER, and I was diagnosed with a, what do they call it, subchorionic hemorrhage or hematoma.
Okay.
So basically, like, bleeding in between the placenta and uterus.
Okay.
Like, it's just slightly separated, so it can create bleeding. And mine wasn't severe, luckily, because they're like, yeah, you just have to take it easy, try to limit trauma to your abdomen. And I'm like, well, I co-sleep with my one-year-old.
So good luck with that, yeah.
We'll see how that goes. So it was fine. That turned out to basically be nothing. So we were planning on telling my parents on that Christmas, but because of the hematoma, we decided to put it off. And my coworkers at work kind of found out that I was pregnant because I did pictures of Santa, because we had Santa come up to the lab to do pictures, and I had the ultrasound picture, and I was thinking that my coworkers were going to be on lunch. So, surprise, surprise, they found out, and my dad, I guess I should point out, my dad also works at the same medical laboratory I do, but he works during the day.
Uh-huh.
So as soon as everybody found out, it was like, we kind of had this all right, nobody says anything. It doesn't leave the, you know, section of the lab because it's just a rumor mill anyway. And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to find out through somebody.
Right.
You know, I didn't even think, but yeah, but it was fine. Yeah, everything, like I said, with him was really kind of uneventful. I guess the only major thing was I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, which I didn't have with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do the finger pricky thing 3 times a day or whatever, 4 times a day. So that was no fun. And my sugars, my fasting sugars were always high. Couldn't tell you why, but everything else was fine. And then I switched care providers. So this was a big stressor. Basically, from the time I found out I was pregnant and my OB said she would not do a VBAC to 26 weeks when I finally did successfully switch. So it's like a 20-week process. I switched over to one of the only VBAC-friendly OBGYNs in the state of Oklahoma because Oklahoma sucks, and they're not very mom and baby friendly with regards to VBACs or anything. And they're actually trying to pass a bill where it'll like limit some of the midwives' power. So it's just a whole big mess down there right now. So yeah, of course. Yeah. Anyway, I digress.
But I find it interesting because there's so many moms that it is so important to get that VBAC, to get that experience. And mm-hmm. I don't understand why doctors would be like so unfriendly to the mother's well-being and what she needs.
Because
it's not like we're in the Scottish Highlands in like the 1600s and it's Outlander and you're going to like bleed out in some hut. I mean, we're talking about 21st century United States. Like, come on.
Yeah, and I mean, statistically, it's shown VBACs are safer than C-sections. Like, you have like a 0.1% chance of your uterus rupturing, which is what they scare you with. It's, oh my gosh, your uterus is going to rupture. You have a 0.1% chance of that, but then you have like 20 to 30% chance that you're going to have some serious complication with the surgery.
Right.
You know, with your second surgery. And I'm like, wait a second, the numbers aren't, like, 2 and 2 is making fish. It's not looking for it, it's fine, but I don't know. Yeah, anyway, that was kind of frustrating. Yeah, it wasn't easy, and I was going to have to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess another big thing to point out. So we did tell my parents when I was 18 weeks. Well, we told my parents and baby daddy's parents when I was 18 weeks. After we found out that we were having a little boy, and we had a name picked out. And his name, by default, was, we couldn't agree on a name. So I went home natalist, he went home a natalist. We compared, literally knocked off all names except for Sebastian, and we're like, there it is.
Perfect.
Bingo. But hey, it works, and it fits them too, so whatever works. But yeah, so after we told my parents, it was kind of, I was still living at home. I was moving out in May. But at that time, I was still obviously at home. It was only February. And they gave me 30 days. They're like, okay, you have 30 days to find a place and get Sean out, kind of deal. And it expedited the timeline by a month, which in hindsight isn't that much. Mm-hmm. Or, like, isn't that big a deal? But in the moment, it was like, oh, my God, they're cutting me down by a month.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are, and it's April already. So a month already isn't that big a deal. It wouldn't have made that much of a difference anyway. So that was really stressful. My ex's, or my baby dad's parents, whatever, they took it exceedingly well. They were just ecstatic and over the moon. His mom is also really baby crazy. So literally any baby she sees, she, like, hones in on with a radar. She's like, I'm going to get that baby now.
She's like, anyway, I can get a baby.
Yes, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we did have more support than last time. I felt like from both sides, even though my parents did kind of, like, expedite my timeline a little bit. But honestly, I wanted to get out of there, too. Because it was, you know, you start butting heads with your mom after a while. And it's just like, we need our own space.
And maybe they just knew you needed more time on your own before the baby arrived, that it would be easier for you to do it. You know.
Right, and that, I think, yeah, that's probably a big part of it too. You know, like, say, move out earlier, you know, get settled longer, you know, you have a little bit more time to settle, get resettled, settled, and then go from there. Because that was all me with 3 or 4 or 7, like 3 or 4 months versus like 2 or 3. So, I guess, yeah, it could be that too. I don't know.
But did child care?
Just from my view.
Did childcare become an issue?
No, it did not. Because I just would drop her off with my parents. So I would either drive up to my parents and then drive to work and then go get her, or I would drop her off with my ex's mom at her school. Okay. And she works, her school is like a mile from our apartment. So I would drop her off with them. And they took on a little bit more of the child care responsibility because my parents have their 6 kids in total. 2 of us are out of the house, technically. I mean, I moved out, and then my brother's in college, so he only comes home on breaks and during the summer. And then another brother, he's getting ready to go. He's hopefully going to get into seminary next year, so he'll be out of the house. But there's still a lot of kids in the house.
Yeah.
So it would be a lot for them to watch both of my kiddos.
Right.
So, maybe that is to kind of take over and take some more responsibility, or at least his parents, because he's still living with his parents, throughout all this. So, but he, took a brunt of the, most of the, 99% of the child care, so it was them. So it really wasn't an issue, it was just a matter of logistics of getting the kids there. Like, I had to leave a little bit earlier, and then I couldn't just, go home and go to bed, and she was there. I had to go wake her up and bring her back to the apartment in the middle of the night, which is kind of a nightmare, but you do what you gotta do.
Yeah. It's not the choice that I would just, decide today. Like, I think I'm gonna start working third shift.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't my first choice, and I never thought I would work, end up in the medical lab. In fact, I told myself, I'm not gonna work in the lab, I'm not gonna work in the lab. My mom did, my dad did, my dad does. My aunt and uncle do. We have tons of family friends who work in the lab. And I guess it was just kind of like natural, you gotta go work there. Mm-hmm. You gotta at least do some time.
It's your destiny.
Yeah, so it's not bad. But, the child care wasn't an issue. It was a little bit more of an adjustment for her because she was used to being at my parents and having a bunch of playmates because my sister, who is the youngest, she is, they're 3 years between them, 4 years, 3.5 years between them. So, Rosalie was always used to having playmates, and now it was just kind of boring old mom. Like, I'm not, I just get around and chase her on the ground like they do, and so it was more of an adjustment for her than it was for anybody, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of stressful, but she adjusted.
So you're pregnant, you're moving out with your first daughter, are you not together with baby daddy anymore?
Formally, no. I guess it was kind of just, we were trying, but looking back, it was like, there was no relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, and I can't, say, oh, it's all his fault completely, because eventually I just stopped trying as well.
Uh-huh.
I think it was around his birthday when I was like, hey, I took off, do you want to go do something? It's like, oh, well, no, I'd rather go out and drink with my friends. I was like, well, you did that yesterday, and that was kind of like the big wake up, like, hey, there really is no relationship here. You're fooling yourself. Like, what the hell are you doing? So it's just kind of like, we never really changed anything because, in my head, it's like, well, there's no relationship. It was just, we were being civil towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
Basically was all it was. But we were trying to make it something it wasn't for the kids.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yeah, okay. It does.
Okay. So, so we are being more civil than not. So this is where, the next piece of this comes into play with when I am, they told me, my OB told me, because of gestational diabetes, she was all for the VBAC. She's like, let's do it. You can do it. Awesome. Here you go. Great. Let's do it. And everything. But because of gestational diabetes, she's like, I really don't want to let you go beyond 39 weeks. Everything was fine. Blood pressure was fine throughout this whole thing. Like I said, the fasting blood sugar was the only one that we were having an issue with. And it wasn't, like, stupid high. It was, like, 5 points higher than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
So it really wasn't any huge red flags, and I never had signs of preeclampsia or anything else. But just, I guess, per protocol, and because I was a VBAC mom, she wouldn't let me go beyond 39 weeks. So the countdown began. We scheduled the induction. Okay. The countdown began. I hit 38 weeks. My doula and OB gave me the go-ahead to try and get the ball rolling. So, awesome. Tried everything. Didn't work. Pineapple, by the way, does not work. So, you have to eat, 6 pineapples in one sitting. Like, it doesn't work. Okay? I tried, and got the acid burns on my tongue to prove it, but yeah, it doesn't work. So, yeah, 39 weeks or 38 weeks rolled around, and it was a Wednesday. And my appointment with my OB was Thursday. It was always on Thursday. And Wednesday morning after I got off work, just like 3 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday morning, I go to get my daughter, and I pick her up, and we haven't gone to court. We have no formal agreement of anything, just because it's more trouble than it's worth. Neither of us wants to go through it. And honestly, I mean, it's really not that big a deal. You know, I get to spend more time with my kids. That's fine. I win, you know? It's a win-win situation, kind of, because I don't know how I would do with them being away for so long. But, so, I asked them about, you know, the financial help for that month. And it's really not much at all. But he was like, he said something, I don't even know what. Basically, the answer was no, I'm not going to help you this month. And so instead of leaving it be, like I've done multiple times, I decided to go ahead and fight him on it. So I'm on my way home, and I called him back, and I was like, well, Mo, you need to help. You need to have more responsibility. We have the baby coming. I think it was the fact that I'm 38 weeks pregnant, and the baby's going to be here next week. Whether or not I go naturally or not, they're going to take the baby next week. And needless to say, we had like a 3-hour, you know, talk, argument, whatever you want to call it over the phone. He comes over to the apartment in the middle of the night, hands me the month, quote, child support, if you will, call it that, I guess, hands it to me in ones, which I was kind of like, okay, all right, that's fine. And it all sends the same anyway. But it was just like massive stack of cash, and he stormed back out, and that was it. And then he called me a couple hours later. I was like, hey, I'm really sorry. But I think we should go ahead and take a break. Mind you, the next day is my OB appointment. They're going to attempt to mechanically induce me with a balloon catheter poly deal, which I'll explain more what that is. But yeah, so potentially the baby could be coming tomorrow, but for sure the baby's coming over the weekend kind of deal. So, I mean, we're on a timeline here. So I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. I don't even care. Yeah, we should take a break. Sure. Like, I just was done fighting. Went to sleep. I got maybe an hour of sleep that day. Went to work, and I forgot that it was the night of the work baby shower, which was so nice of them. I mean, my department is amazing, and they put on this nice little baby shower for me. And I did have to wear a sash and a little tiara deal, which I wasn't too thrilled about. But, you know, oh, well, it's okay. And I just remember telling them, I told my boss, I was like, thank you for doing this. She goes, oh, no problem. I said, no, you don't understand. I really, really need this today. Like, and everybody, it was just nice, because after being kind of, like I said, we weren't in a relationship, but we were still, you know, we were still being civil toward each other, and we were still trying, I guess. It was just, after that, you know, kind of like, fuck you kind of deal from him. Mm-hmm. It was nice just to be surrounded by, you know, my coworkers and being just really held up and supported. It was just really nice. So timing-wise, that worked out pretty nicely. But yeah, then the next day I go in to be mechanically induced with my OB. She does the balloon catheter. Basically, you have to be like 1 centimeter dilated for her to get this thing up there. And they fill this water balloon with saline, I think is what it is. They fill it with saline. And then it just kind of sits there on your cervix. So it puts pressure there. It kind of like, I guess, imitate the baby there. So it dilates you. And I remember her saying, it's going to be uncomfortable, you know. And I've had this before with my daughter when I was induced with her 2 years ago. I was like, okay, well, I just remember that was really uncomfortable. I can deal with that. Well, I don't know what happened this time, but I was driving home. And I'm like, okay, you know, we're going to go to Target. We're going to walk. We're going to try and get things moving. We got this deal in here. And I told my boss, because she had been texting me, and she's like, hey, just let me know what happens and how you feel. Okay. Texted her about an hour later. I said, I feel fine. I'll be in tonight. She's like, great. Well, after 2 hours of walking at Target, and finally, I did schedule the induction then while I was at Target. The nurse called me back. She's like, hey, what about Sunday, July 2nd? And I'm like, that sounds great. Let's do it. So I'm walking around Target, and then the contractions pick up. But they were like, they weren't productive contractions, and I knew that because they hurt, but not in like, you know, a it's working kind of way. And it took me out. So I grabbed my daughter. I think we just left the cart. I didn't even remember checking out. I grabbed my daughter out of the cart, ran out to the cart. car. I was driving home. I was not even sitting on the driver's seat. I was, like, holding myself up with my left foot. I was trying to drive. You know, I probably should have just called somebody to come get me at that point, but oh well. I made it up to my parents' house because they were the closest ones, and I thought I was dying. And I called my boss, I was like, change plans, I'm not coming in, forget about it. She's like, okay, all right, well, we'll see you in 6 weeks. Because we all thought that was it. And then it stopped. And then it was, for the next 3 days, I guess it's called prodromal labor, mm-hmm. It was on and off. So it was emotionally draining, as well as obviously physically draining. I had to deal with the fact that I was going to, that Saturday night, I went to drop my daughter off with her dad and her other grandparents, and I had to say goodbye to my daughter, my only child, you know, who has no idea what's about ready to hit her, and that was really, really hard, just, you know, because I felt bad, I felt guilty,
mm-hmm.
like she's so little, she doesn't understand, like, I should not be having another baby. And it was, I knew, it was around this time, sometime in June, I had this sense, just this, I don't know, this intuition that I am going to get postpartum depression this time. There was really no reason to. This was, you know, before the blow up with my ex and everything. Like, there really was no reason for me to think that. But I just had this feeling like, I'm going to get postpartum depression this time. Didn't tell you why. So, yeah. Anyway, going for the induction with my son. All the beds are full, so I spend like the rest of the day walking around. And then I get labor going on my own. I go in later that night, and everything's fine. They're like, "Oh yeah, you're in labor." They put the Pitocin on to like the lowest dose possible, and they took it off because things just took off. Yeah. Then my son was born at 4:57 in the morning. So I went in. I guess it was 12 hours of, I guess, actual labor with him.
Mm-hmm.
I did came and I got the epidural, but I wouldn't get it. I was like, I was so worried I was going to get it stuck at 7. And this is where, I guess, the postpartum depression thing actually kind of all starts, because I didn't tell my ex that I was in the hospital. He knew I was getting induced that day, but he knew that I hadn't gone in that morning because they had no bed. But I was going to call him when things really got moving, because I didn't want him there when I'm just sitting there kind of in early labor, because honestly, I really didn't even want to see him.
Right.
You know? And I always tried to keep stress in your environment, you know, which I did last time with my daughter. We had friends of his there, you know, and it was just a stressful environment. And I'm like, maybe that's why everything happened the way it did. So I tried to minimize my stress. Well, I forgot. I didn't forget to call him, but I forgot, I guess, to tell my doula to call him because things picked up so fast. Like, I was at a 3 when I went in. I think I was at a 6 by 9, so it was like 3 hours later. And then I was at an 8 at midnight when I got the epidural. And I made it past my 7, and that was the big mental block right there. It's like, I have to do this. I have to make it past 7. And, you know, my doula, she's like, hey, yay, you made it past 8, yay! You know, my mom was there. My mom did come, because I asked her to, because I'm, you know, I'm a baby. I need my mom there. Made it past 8. That mental block was done. And then I realized I have a bunch of missed calls from him. That created more stress. I would let him back in the room. He was all pissed, whatever. And finally, I think it was like 4:30. My epidural wore off about 4 o'clock. Like, I could feel everything down my left side, and then eventually I could feel everything, which was a blessing and a curse. Because, you know, I could feel to, you know, actively get him out, but I could feel. he was born, and everything was fine. There was some stress with after we went to the recovery room. I tried to block it out just because, you know, I don't know, sticks and stones might break my bones. But basically, my ex proceeded to tell me kind of what a horrible person I was for not calling him sooner. And, you know, I tried not to let that get to me. But at the same time, I'm like, well, yeah, well, why didn't you tell me we're going in? You know, those thoughts started. Like, why didn't you just call him when he got the call from the hospital? You know, you didn't have to let him in the room. He could have just been sitting at the hospital the whole time. So that whole mental train just derailed. And I remember, I'm bouncing all over again. I remember after my son was born, it was 7 minutes of pushing, which is, I thought, a miracle because I could have sworn I was going to be there forever. They put him on my chest, and where it took my daughter, I felt this instant kind of connection, even though it was delayed by an hour or two because of the C-section. I still felt that instant connection. With him, it was just more of like, I remember saying, I can't believe I did it. Like, did I really do that? It was shock, but no lovey-dovey oxytocin-induced high connection to my baby. And in that moment, something in my head went, here we go. Like, this is it. Like, you know, like, it's not going to be good. I don't know why, you know, because some moms don't feel that connection and they're perfectly fine. You know,
right.
It just, it's, I don't know. So, yeah. Went home 24 hours later, got to come home on July 4th. Oh, so he was born July 3rd. Got to go home July 4th, which is my dad's birthday. So we went up to my parents, blew up fireworks, ate too much barbecue, had a good time. That first week was kind of blissful because even though I was exhausted and trying to adjust, I was still with my parents, you know, and I wasn't by myself. And as soon as they told me, I mean, they didn't kick me out. Like, they're like, well, you can stay longer if you want. But it's kind of, you know, that hinting like, hey, you know, why don't you go on home and, you know, go be at home? Which I know I needed to because everybody needs to leave the nest eventually. You know, and I had left the nest and I was back for a little bit. I think I was there, yeah, a week. But I remember going home and that first full day that we were in the apartment by ourselves, it was the worst day of my life. I remember calling my ex's mom and being like, hey, what are you guys doing for dinner? And she's like, oh, I don't know. Why? And I was like, can I go up to for dinner? She goes, yeah, sure. And I got me all clear for my OB to drive a week postpartum. She's like, yeah, you have, you know, you're not taking any medications. There were no, you know, huge, there was no major massive trauma down there that requires, you know, attention. And I didn't have any complications during delivery. So I was free to go. And every night, oh, I guess I should also backtrack. I had bronchitis and pneumonia my entire maternity leave.
Well, fun.
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, so I'm sitting there with my newborn and my almost 2-year-old in bed, and I'm coughing and sick, and of course it's not just like the quiet coughing, it's like the coughing fits that you are pretty sure your lungs are going to come out of your mouth. I'm just going to cough along up, and it's going to be great, and oh my gosh, yeah, it was bad. So that was going on. I did not want to be alone in the apartment with the kids. No real reason why. I didn't want to be alone with them. So the second week, I guess postpartum second week, I was dining in the car. I would feed my daughter, feed my son, put them in the car, and we would drive. I mean, we were driving for 3 and 4 hours a day, which sounds horrible. Like, I would stop, like, in a Walmart parking lot or a Target parking lot, or in the Ulta Beauty parking lot where I'm sitting right now. And I would feed him, you know, and I would have snacks for her. And after he would eat, I would change him, change her, do whatever, you know, let her out to play. And then we would get back in the car and drive, which makes me sound like a horrible mom because, oh my God, you had your kids in the car for 3 or 4 hours every single day for a long time. But that's the only way I could cope because I literally thought I was going to lose my goddamn mind sitting in my house, you know. And I still thought at that point, oh, postpartum depression and, you know, all that. You don't want to be outside. You just want to be in your house. You just want to not do anything. Well, I couldn't stand being in my house. Like, I couldn't stand it.
Right.
And I remember we went to Barnes & Noble. You know, I was that mom who was like, I'm not going to take my kids out until, you know, they're 6 weeks old and blah, blah, blah. Yes, he was out from the get-go. Like, out of date, we were doing fine. A big thing. I completely forgot until I looked at my notes. We had difficulties breastfeeding. My daughter was some sort of child prodigy where she got it off the bat. She was the best nurser. In fact, my mom, when they came to visit, she goes, I hate saying this, she goes, but I'm really jealous of you right now. And I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, because look at how perfect your latch is. Look, and my mom is a retired early cheerleading leader. She's like, look at how perfect your latch is. I mean, look at that butt. Can you see that? You know, she's like, none of you guys, you know, and particularly me. She ended up formula feeding me after 2 weeks. But she tried for 2 weeks, but then she's like, you know, I can't do this. So she was like, she was giving me crap about that. She's like, yeah, birthing was so easy. And I guess I just thought that fashion was going to be easy like that. Well, he was the laziest. I think she calls him, a lazy nurser, or some other term. But he basically, unless it's a letdown, he's not going to suck. So he just sat there. So I had to supplement him because his blood sugar felt too low. I supplement him with formula, which I was for sure not going to do this time. Ended up doing it anyway. Not a big deal. Tried to get him to latch. So that created some issues. So I'm dealing with this while I'm out, while I'm trying to breastfeed him in my car. Why? I don't even know. But it was more painful for me to be in the apartment by myself with them than it was for me to drive around and struggle to breastfeed him out in public. Which seems backwards. But to me, the apartment deal was bigger.
And this whole transition to, I mean, just like postpartum depression, it doesn't have to make sense.
Right. Which I now know. But, you know, I thought, oh, you have to, you know, have the baby blues, which I didn't. I did with my daughter. I cried for like 3 days with my daughter, and it was fine. But with him, I really didn't have the baby blues. It just kind of like jumped straight to you know, aren't, you know, doing anything. You know, right, like you're sitting in the apartment and, you know, I was just going crazy. I would just sit there and I was sure, which I now know this is postpartum OCD. I did also know this is a thing. That I would sit there and I was convinced someone was going to break into the apartment and I wasn't going to know. They were going to open our door and they were going to stab the kid first and I was going to watch this and then stab me. Like, I was convinced. So there were nights where I would sit there staring at the door, being like, somebody's going to come through. And every single noise, I would just freak out. I'd be like, that's it. Somebody's here. I've never had that issue before. I will admit, I am a wuss. I'm afraid of the dark. Still sleep with a nightlight. But this was something like else. This was another level of fear.
Right.
And then, to top that off, you know, so you're driving around 3 or 4 hours a day. We were never really home in the apartment. We were always at my ex's parents for dinner, which they didn't mind because, again, Bryce's mom, she loves babies. So she had to spend more time with the grandkids. Or we were at my parents' for dinner. Depended on who was doing what that night. So then, you know, you're spending a lot of time in the car. Then the intrusive thought of, I'm sitting at a stoplight, and I remember this, I was sitting at a stoplight, and it was during rush hour, and I saw this car coming up from behind us, and I was sure that he was going to crash into us. So I hurried up and looking back, it was kind of unsafe. I mean, there was nobody in the lane next to me, but I pulled over really fast into the turn lane, even though I didn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled over into the turn lane so this guy wouldn't crash into us. Well, he wasn't going to crash into us. He was basically going like 3 miles an hour. Like, it just, I don't know. But in my rearview mirror, it looked like he was coming at me at freaking like speed. Like, and I was sure, if I didn't move my car, we were all going to die. Or, my big thing was, they were going to die, and I was going to listen to them. This is so morbid. I'm sorry. But I was going to be listening to them die in the backseat while I was up front, unable to help them. And to me, these thoughts, again, I'm just like, oh, it's because you're stressed out. You aren't getting very much sleep. You have 2 kids now, you know, and you're just worried about whatever. You're just about the breastfeeding thing. Again, nothing really clicked, but something was really, really wrong. You know, until week 3. When I was starting to get a little bit better from the bronchitis, I was still coughing, but I could lay down and sleep a little bit more than before. And I would lay there and not sleep at all. I would just lay there, be awake, all night, when they were asleep and when I wasn't coughing. So there was literally no reason for me to be awake. But I was. I was awake. Which, you know, insomnia is also a side effect or symptom or whatever.
Right.
Postpartum depression, anxiety, everything. I mean, it's a symptom of all of them, I guess. Which I didn't know. But I just chalked it up to, again, well, I've had bronchitis, so maybe I'm just sick. But I'm not coughing. It made no sense. Like, my brain was just trying to rationalize this. So, yeah. Then on top of it all, I had the financial stress.
Right.
My short-term disability checks weren't coming in. So I had no income for the entire month of July. And it turned out that was because the people who were doing my short-term disability forgot to put my apartment number on the checks. So, you know, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. I mean, you know, you just need to pay rent and buy food and all that.
Yeah, okay. No big deal.
No big deal. Let's see. What's down here? Oh, yeah. Another thing I would do is I would check the lock on our front door a lot. Like, I would lock it, I would open it, and then, like, really hard try to pull on it. And then I would unlock it, open the door, close the door, lock the door, do it again, unlock it. I would do this 3 or 4 times, and then eventually it would just be like, I would check and make sure it was locked all the way and try to, I mean, it was, gosh, wow, yeah. That was my big first red flag. I'm like, this really isn't normal. Like, but I was so sure I didn't do this that I was not going to lock the door. Somebody's going to break in. Or literally not break in, just walk in because they left the door unlocked. Another irrational thought that I have. I feel like sharing this because nobody talks about this. Nobody talks about the intrusive thoughts, or which I will get into in a minute, or really the OCD anxious thoughts. You know, they're just kind of like, oh yeah, you can't sleep. You know, it's that blanket postpartum depression term that they like to use for everything, which I hate. I hate that. Because it's like, it's not all the same. It's really not.
No.
It's not. Oh, but yeah, I don't know. It's just, oh, it's not. But the other thing is, so I had my son in the bucket baby carrier seat, you know, whatever I would call those, the infant carriers, and my daughter's in a convertible car seat, so I have to actually unbuckle her to get her out, whereas I can take his whole seat out with him. Well, I would always put him in the car first, okay, just because he's behind me, and I would walk around and put my daughter in her car seat. Well, I would start the car, and I would look back and make sure the car seat was in the car. And if I didn't see the car seat in the car, because all I had to do was adjust my rearview mirror, but if I didn't see it in the rearview mirror for whatever reason, I would get out in a panic, sure that I had left him on the side of the car, not put him in the car.
Mm-hmm.
There were some times when I'd be driving down the road, mind you, after I've already checked to be sure he's in the car, that I would panic. I would just be like, oh my God, is he in the car? I would unbuckle at a stoplight. Luckily, okay, it's always a stoplight or stop sign. I think when my mind would stop thinking about driving, so I would be sitting there, I would freak out. I'm like, oh my God, he's not in the car. I would turn around. No, he's in the car. You know, his seat is right there. He's in the car. You know this. You check. Like, what the hell's going on? Again, I couldn't figure out what that was. I never had that with my daughter. I was never worried that I was just going to leave her somewhere. But maybe it's because I had two of them, and I was just like, I'm going to forget one of them. Surely, I'll forget one of them. But it also didn't help that, of course, it's summertime, and you hear all the stories of people leaving their kids in cars. That my fear wasn't I'm going to leave them in the car. My fear wasn't I'm going to leave them out of the car and not put them in the car. I think that fueled the fire of my anxiety a lot, with all those stories, which didn't help. So, yeah, my entire maternity leave was hell. I was supposed to get 6 weeks. I don't think I got a full 6. Like, I could have taken more. I was eligible for more, but it was unpaid at that point. And I didn't obviously have the funds to go unpaid, because, hello, who does? I didn't win the lottery. I didn't have that much in savings, so, which is my fault. I should have put more into savings, I realized, but I don't know. I think it might have been done more damage had I actually stayed off longer, which sounds horrible, but yeah. So then during this whole thing, I'm stressing out about going back to work, trying to pump so he has enough for when I go back to work. I have all this guilt about leaving him so early because he's so small, we still don't have a good breastfeeding relationship. He's not going to know, you know, what's going on. The other thing that I thought was he was going to fall in love with his grandma more than he was going to love me. That he was going to love her more than if I left him with them. But I was like, well, you know what? I have to work. Like, I have to take care of him. So, you know what? If he loves her more, oh well. And I legitimately thought he was going to love her more. And there were times when I'm like, he just doesn't love me. He just loves her more. And my daughter, too. Like, she would get mad at me or something. Because I would tell her, you know, don't stick your finger in the electrical socket or something like that. You know, something really for her safety.
Right.
Not just, you know, you can't have the cookie. It'd be sort of like, no, don't jump off me. Don't jump on the bed. You could fall off. And she would yell at me, and I would feel, I was convinced that she was telling me, I don't love you. I want to be with my grandma. You know, I love her more. Blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Obviously, she wasn't. She was yelling at me. Gibberish, whatever she was yelling at me. She was pissed, though. So, I don't know. I'm trying to decipher it. But yeah, so this whole maternity leave was just hell. And then the intrusive thought started more so. I don't know even really if the car crashing thing would be an intrusive thought.
Mm-hmm.
So much as, okay, but
I think it would.
I don't know. I mean, it was an unwanted, you know, just randomly in there kind of deal thought. But then it also turned, I guess, into the, I would obsess about it all the time. Like every time we got in the car, I'm like, okay, if I'm not constantly looking at my rearview mirror, I swear I was looking at my rearview mirror more than I was looking at forward. I want to say it felt like it anyway. I don't think I was, but it felt like it. But I got it in my head the, I don't want to use the word crazy, but basically the messed upness that is postpartum disorders. I was, you know, one night he was screaming and my daughter was screaming. And I dealt with a lot of rage, which a lot of people don't talk about, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I legitimately thought I'm just a bad person. Like, something has happened to me, I just snapped, I'm a bad mom. I'm going to be one of those moms that you see on TV who one day just snaps. You know, I thought that. Because I was so angry all the time. All the time. At everything. My daughter would look at me wrong, and I would yell at her. I'd be like, what do you want? You know? Or she would start crying because she hurt herself. And I'd be like, my God. I would tell her, I'd be like, you know what, you're fucking fine, just deal with it. She's pregnant too, and she hurt herself, and I'm yelling at her, because I'm a horrible mom, you know, and, oh my God, I would just yell at her for everything, and it necessarily wasn't the baby, but she just did more to piss me off. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, again, but she doesn't do very well with independent play. She likes somebody to play with her, which I understand. I don't like being by myself. But she would want to play with me and ask me to read her book. I remember her favorite book is Goodnight Moon. I took it from her, and I said, I'm not going to read this. And I tore the content bedroom. And I said, there, now it's gone. And she cried, and I literally felt no remorse for that. I felt nothing. Because all I knew was I was mad. And I didn't want to read the fucking book. You know?
Mm-hmm. I do.
And I have no idea why. Like, it's Goodnight Moon. It's one of the easiest books to read. And it doesn't rhyme. So, there's really no reason it should annoy the hell out of me. Sorry. Oh my God, I'm not a very attractive crier, so I probably don't sound very nice either.
I make most everyone cry. It's not that I'm not trying to, but this is just really raw, intense shit we have to deal with.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, I'm not sure probably any of this to anybody because, the other thought that I had was because I was so mad all the time, and I was sure. I wasn't yelling loud. I know I wasn't, like, screaming at her. But I was sure somebody was going to call Child Protective Services and they were going to come get my kids. And so I felt myself rationalizing everything to everyone. If I saw my neighbors, I would, you know, if my daughter didn't have shoes on and I had them in my hand, it's the middle of summer, it's, you know, whatever, she doesn't need shoes on. I'd be like, oh, I've got her shoes in the backpack or I got them right here. I'm not unnecessarily... explaining myself to everyone because I thought every single thing, everybody was judging me on. My son blew out all of his sleepers. And even if you try to stain treat those, things don't come out all the time.
Right.
Because that's bad baby poop is from Satan himself. And just stains everything. The worst thing in the world. And I would feel, like if I had it out in public in a stained sleeper, I would feel people like, again, nobody was. But I thought they were staring at me and being like, she puts her kids in dirty clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'd be like, oh, it's just, you know, it's just a thing. I would tell random people this. Like, if I was walking in Walmart and somebody looked at me sideways, I would explain whatever it was that I thought they were looking at. And they would look at me like, okay, like, not that big a deal. Like, okay, I'm just looking at how cute your kids are. Which, in reality, that's what I'm looking at. It's a cute baby.
Right.
They're not looking at, you know, the same. Again, he's in the car seat. There's no way I can see the stain of his back.
Right.
You know? But, you know, that's obviously what they were looking at because Martin told me that. But, so it's just, aside from the rage, you know, that is what I think fueled the worry. I mean, every time I would take my son to the doctor, he has what's called a Mongolian spot. Their dad is Honduran and Guatemalan, so he's darker. And I am the whitest person you will meet. So, we kind of like, they're mocha colored.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my son is lighter than my daughter, though. So, but he still has this Mongolian spot, which I guess is common in, like, darker skin babies, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I guess because, like, they have more pigmentation, I guess. So it's like, it looks like a bruise, okay? And I thought it was because he came out really fast. I'm like, oh, maybe my OB had to grab him. But it never went away. you know, and then my pediatrician was just like, oh yeah, it's a Mongolian spot, and it's nothing to worry about, but it looks like a bruise. So then, of course, that fueled the Child Protective Services illusion that they were going to come get me, and so I was worried to let him wear onesies out. I wouldn't put him in sleepers because it was way too hot, but I would, you know, put a light blanket over him, like a Muslim blanket.
That's okay.
And he told me he's not going to co-sleep with Sebastian because he's too little and he doesn't have quite the mental, he just doesn't feel comfortable with him. And I wasn't comfortable with it either, so it worked out. But for some reason, that was dancing, they're processing, and I get it in my head that tonight, my ex is going to sleep with the baby in his bed, and he is going to roll on top of him and suffocate him and smother him to death if I do not go and leave right this minute. So I literally threw the stuff into the buckets. I finished processing that wreck. I tore my lab coat off. I went up to my boss. I was like, I need to leave. She's like, why? Okay, why? You know, she's trying to play it off. It's like, okay, there's nothing really wrong, but she could tell. I'm like, I just need to leave. I just need to go home to get the baby. And she goes, oh, that's fine. She didn't question it. She let me go home without an issue. Because, you know, it was my first week back, and she gets it. You know, she has two kids of her own. She gets it. So I went to get him. Well, them both, I guess. And I walked in, and my ex's mom was like, hi, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I just need him. And she was like, okay, here you go. And as soon as I had him, it was okay. You know, that anxiety went away. The scary feeling went away. As soon as I knew he was safe with me. So, I did, I don't know, it's a big mess. Yeah. So that was week one at work. Week two at work. And I found them. When I would go to work during the week, I would be more angry with my daughter. Again, rage, I don't even know why. She did nothing wrong. The rage is more directed at her, what she did, and so not so much the baby. So during the week, I felt like I was constantly yelling at her. But on the weekends, we would go over to my parents, and she would kind of, I guess it was because she would just go play with my siblings, and she really wasn't next to me, and I wasn't spending that much time with her, I guess. Or, like, I still was, but I wasn't, like, it was just her and I. I don't know if that makes any sense. That would be really jumbled. So I found myself yelling less on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked forward to the weekend. And then my parents asked how that first week of work went. And I said, oh, it was great. It was fine. I did not tell them I left early. Because I just didn't want, I don't know. My mom, and she is, you know, rightfully so, she is worried when I call in to work or when I, you know, do whatever, that, you know, it does look bad. You know, they don't like when you call in, but she's worried I'm going to lose my job. And, you know, she tells me that every time, which is kind of helpful, but kind of not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she means well. She really does, but it just doesn't help. Like, you know, I couldn't stand hearing, oh, you know, that really doesn't look good. It's like, I know it doesn't look good, but I can't stay at work. I couldn't. I was panicking, and I'm panicking now. God, okay. All
right. You're feeling it again. Like, when I write or talk about my feelings, like, I have to do it a lot of times to, like, fully, like, let the feeling leave me.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure if I had my Fitbit on, it would tell me my heart rate. Like, I already have high heart rate anyway. I'm pretty sure it would tell me right now, like, you are maxing out face heart rate tone. Okay. All right. Sorry. Anyway. So our second week back at work, I did fine Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think I made it until Thursday. And then Thursday, I go on my 15. So it's about 3 hours, 3.5, 4 hours after I am at work. And I just start crying. And I don't stop. And I can't stop. I call my doula, and she's like, I'm at a conference, hang on. She texts me, I'll call you back in 10 minutes. She calls me back, she's like, what's going on? You know, and I told her, and I think at this point, we had already... technically wasn't her client anymore. We had a postpartum visit and everything was done. But I felt like she was like one of the only people I could call about this.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew kind of, you know, what was going on. So I think that's why she took the call and was like, okay, we're talking through this. And I just said, I can't stop crying. Like, over what? I don't even know. I was literally sitting there and just crying. And she's like, okay, why don't you go in and try to call me out? I was like, I'll go in. She said, drink some water or coffee or whatever. Okay. Didn't work. So I'm out there for an hour on what is supposed to be my 15-minute break, crying. And then I start panicking. And I start hyperventilating, and I'm freaking out, and I'm shaking. And a coworker of mine, she's like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know what's going on. And I did this thing, which probably made me look, again, I don't like to use the word crazy, but not okay, I guess. It made me look not okay, because I would sit there, and I took my middle finger in my right hand, and I kind of like you're holding an orange in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I was like tapping my face just over and over, which it turns out, I guess it's a technique or something, like tapping technique, like it supposedly calms you. So maybe it was like, I don't know. I saw it on the internet, so it must be true. So, I don't know, but, like, I'm sitting there, I was tapping, like, under my eye, like, my cheekbone, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm tapping that over and over, and she's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go get her boss, you know, because she was working that night. And she comes out, she's like, hey, are you okay? I'm like, I cannot stop. And so she kind of talks me through it. She goes, okay, go clock out and come back. You know, so I went and clocked out and came back. And so she, I said, I just need to go home. I'm like, okay. She said, well, I don't want you going home in this state. She said, because I just, she goes, if you want somebody to take you home, we will. I said, no. She said, okay, then just sit here for a little bit. She gave me some peppermint. She goes, her cure is peppermint. And I leave, yeah. Peppermint? Yeah. A little lifesaver. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. She loves those things. So she gave me a handful. She's like, here you go. And they just help. I think it was because, like, it was something to do, something to eat or chew on. I don't know. So I sat there for 2 or 3 hours. Another friend of mine came out, and he was like, hey, are you okay? I told him, I said, hey, I'm just, and he was, like, one of the first people I told. I think he was, like, the first coworker I told. And I said, I have this postpartum anxiety. I said, I'm pretty sure I have postpartum depression, too. And he's like, okay. And he was like, hey, yeah. He goes, it's not the same. He said, my girlfriend has anxiety. He said, here's what she does. Here's some helpful things that you might try, blah, blah, blah. And I did have some of the few of them. You know, like the visualization, I think, is what they call it, or something. Like, she looks for things in the room, like, okay, I have to find something red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, you know, kind of deal. Just to ground you and bring you back down. And then I read about, I guess, like the 5 senses. So you look for something you can see, something you can smell, taste, something to feel, and then something, I guess, that, I don't know, hear or smell. I can't remember. I know, you look for all the 5 senses. I probably said. So you look for the 5 senses, something that you can interact with each of your senses with, and that helps ground you, which does work, because I do that all the time. Like, it doesn't, you know, completely take it away, but it takes the edge off. So after that, it kind of was obvious to everybody, because of course, I'm in the break room, everybody's there on lunch or on their break, everybody's seeing me freak the fuck out. It's obvious there's something wrong with me. And I don't want to say wrong with me, but there is. There's something not right. You know? No, yeah, I there's something off. And I tried to play it off for the longest time. And the next day I went in, and one of my coworkers, she's just like a mom to everybody. She was like, hey, you know, she said, I kind of noticed when you would come in on maternity leave, she goes, especially the second time, she said, you weren't yourself. She goes, there was something off with you. I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, you just, you know, she goes, especially, you know, when you first came back, she goes, you didn't want to talk to anybody yourself. Like, why didn't anybody tell me this? Like, there were red flags. You all saw them. Why didn't somebody? Anyway. It's not their fault, obviously, but it's like, people noticed. And I didn't think anybody was. Like, it was my own personal hell. I'm really nervous about kind of sharing this next tidbit. Because, it is, something very, I don't know what the word is. So, like, I guess, trigger warning would be a good one, I guess. But it's disturbing, because it is. And I don't know if I should share it.
Then you should.
You know? But I know I should, because I read one thing, one article on the internet I found mentioned it. One. And I know, I'm pretty sure, I don't know for 100%, but I'm pretty sure that it's more common of an issue than people talk about. But anyway, so fast track to September, second week of September. And I was at work. A little bit of backstory. I guess my ex is the only person who knew about this because he guessed it from my behavior and the way I was acting. Because he's been there with me through it before. A little bit of backstory. All throughout high school, I was a self-harming cutter. I guess you could use that term. Cutter. I hate that term. But that's what I did. And it started after my grandma died because I blamed myself. You know, and it was just always kind of my coping deal. Because I had no coping skills. And this worked. Like, it made me, well, it didn't work, but, you know, it gave me that false sense of working. So I did that for, gosh, I don't know how many years. see, she's 2010 to 2014, 2013. I think for 3 or 4 years. Sorry, I had to do math in my head. I'm like, wait a second. I think I struggled with that for 3 or 4 years before I finally stopped. And at this point, I was 3.5 years clean, if you will. Like, I was almost 4 years free of doing this. I was at work one night, and I was having just a meltdown. And I didn't realize, again, and I hear you talk about this all the time on here, and everybody else who talks about this, you don't realize how bad it is until you're out of it. And I'm not fine by any means, but I'm out of the dark, dark, dark part. And, like, you don't realize how bad you actually are. Like, and how serious it is. Because I remember sitting there at work and getting into my head, like, I'm going to go get a pencil sharpener because I'm going to use the blades, which, again, is morbid. But this was literally, it was like a sing-songy little jig in my head. You know, because this will work. This will help you. This will take care of the problem. Which I already know from experience, it doesn't fix it. So why I would even, I don't even know. So I went to Walmart, bought the 97-cent pencil sharpener. Well, they have fixed the problem, I guess, the people using getting the blades out of there, because however they put whatever screw in there, you couldn't get it out. So I couldn't get it out, and then I started panicking. I should have at this point called somebody or taken myself somewhere, but the judgment and horrific reactions of everyone the last time that this came out, I didn't want to go through that again. So I freaked out. And then I remembered that they're box cutters or X-Acto knives, whatever is in the toolkit that you get. Like the do-it-yourself toolkit comes with a little knife deal that you like push out and it goes in and out. Went and got that. And I sat there on the couch. My kids, I hadn't gone to get my kids yet. I had gotten off work. And I just didn't go get them. I just sat in my apartment for a little bit. I sat there with the knife. And I stared at it. And then the next thing I remember is I looked down and I had relapsed again. And it was so horrifying for me to see. I was terrified. And then that thought of, for sure, they're going to take my kids now. Because I thought, and I know I don't want to use this word again, but the thought that went through my head and what I actually said out loud was, I'm crazy. Like, no normal person does this to themselves. They're going to take my kids. I'm going to lose my kids, all because I couldn't control myself in this moment. And again, like I said, when I literally say, I remember sitting there staring at it, and then the next time the thought I have is the finished product. I don't know what happened at that time. I don't know how much time had passed. So I hid that from everybody for a while. I always carried that knife around with me. I would never do it around my kids or where my kids were or when my kids were home or anything. It got down to I was only doing it at work in the bathroom, which I'm sure is some sort of liability thing for them. God fucking damn it. I would do it in the bathroom on my break. Because I was so stressed out at work, and I just hated being at work. I didn't want to be at work. And I noticed, again, this is major, too much information, goriness. I noticed that they weren't so shallow anymore, that they were getting deeper, and I could go deeper and deeper. And the last time that I did it, this went on for about 2 weeks, I think. This was a 2-week period. The last time I did it, I remember it would not stop bleeding. And it was bleeding through my jeans at work. And it was getting blood everywhere, all over my jeans. And it was seeping through. So I ripped my lab coat off, took my gloves off, I ran to the bathroom. and I like had to hold pressure on it, and it wouldn't close, which I should have had gone to the emergency room to have to stitch it up. And it's fine now, like it healed. It just took a while, but that was a wake up call. I mean, that was like something snapped in me that was like, "Hey, wake up, because you're going to kill yourself if you keep this up." Like I was not suicidal, but something in my mind went, "If you don't watch yourself, you're going to cut too far one time, and that's going to be it." And nobody talks about this, but I don't even know if it is common. I don't know if it's something that's not, but like if you have like previous mental health disorders and previous, I guess, issues like this, or things that you do to cope, like, I know there are different self-harm categories, you know, I don't think they tell you, I don't even know if it's true or not, but it is a possibility, I guess, like, that you could fall back into those old habits, because you feel like you're going through the same thing. I'm not a medical professional, I probably shouldn't be saying that. But to me, it makes sense, like, and they don't tell you this, just like they don't tell you, and the only reason I found out is because of all the research I did, that if you have a previous mental health disorder, that you're at a higher risk for developing a, you know, postpartum disorder, they don't tell you that. I only didn't, at least. You know, and so it makes sense that you would, if it's a possibility, you could slip back into old habits.
Right.
I guess. Well, I didn't know how to word that, but I was pretty worried. I was looking for the right word.
Sometimes there isn't, like, one word that describes it.
I don't know. But, yeah, I found one article on that mentioned the mom cutting her, I think it was her wrist, and she would try to hide it from her husband. And the first time he caught her was at dinner one night when he saw that, you know, after she took her wrist up, that her sleeve was bloody. And the way she was writing, she said, "My husband looked at me and he said, okay, we're just going to go to the hospital and it'll be fine." And he was totally calm and cool and, you know, supportive throughout it all. And every time that she would do it, he's like, "You know what? We're just going to go and, you know, we're going to go take care of this and we're going to go to the hospital. It's not going to be a big deal." He didn't make a big deal out of it, you know, but I knew that if I told people, big deals would be made.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I wasn't intending to tell my ex, because, especially about something like this, but he figured it out based off of my behavior, and it was nice just to kind of, and we aren't on, like, horrible, you know, terms, but, you know, we're also not on the best terms, but it was nice, because in that moment, he's like, he said, "I kind of knew you would," you know, he said, "You were acting weird," and he said, you know, I gave him the, what do you call it, the little X-Acto knife deal, and he said, "Okay, I'll just keep it," and that's what I did the last time. And I gave him my little blade, he kept it, wasn't a big deal, you know, and he just threw it away. And so it was nice to not have it completely rotting away inside of me. But then, of course, at the same time, "Oh my God, you just told your ex this thing, he could take your kids from you." Well, he really doesn't want to do that. So, you know, hindsight is fine. So that was the morbidity of my littleness. But I still, that still wasn't the low point, which, how much lower can you get, you know? Like, how low can you go? So after that, I started running into some trouble at work. I really don't remember much from after that incident to about January. I really don't remember much at all from when my son was born until January. But the highlights, which sounds horrible to call it, the highlights, like that. But I also remember shortly after, it was like a week later, I got called into my boss's office, and they told me that I was taking too long a break. I had no sense of time. I thought I was going out at a certain time, but apparently I was staying out there for like 30 minutes instead of 15 minutes, or 40 minutes instead of 15 minutes. But throughout the whole time, my productivity was fine, so I think that's where my mind was like, "Oh, well, you're fine," you know? Because if you can keep the productivity up at work, obviously you're not spending that much time out in the break room, but in reality, I was.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me on probation, or whatever you call it. But I had to check in and check out with all of them. I had to be left hand going on break, and then I had to check on someone and got back from break. And what that did, and in the moment, I really was just pissed off and I hated all of them. But what it did was reset myself, because I was more afraid of losing my job and being seen as a failure than anything. It reset my system, and I'm like, okay, I have to do this. And after that, I started coming kind of to it a little bit more. I was able to keep track of my time without a problem. Other things in life started balancing out as well. I had better time management after they started making me do that. Again, like I said, I just didn't have a concept of really time at this point. So I had to do that for a month. That was great. then that was over and done with. And then I just kind of sat stagnant for a while. I went and I did shave just about all my hair off because I was taking the Zoloft at this point. I guess I should backtrack a little bit. I did start taking the Zoloft when I went back to work after I had the breakdown kind of deal, my second week. Also, to backtrack, I have not seen my OBGYN since the morning of July 4th. I have not seen her since then, even to this day. So it's been 9 months since I've seen her. I saw her nurse practitioner, physician assistant, or whoever it is. She got my prescriptions, whatever, her second in command. Saw her. And every time I would call my OB's office to tell them something was wrong, I would talk to, I guess, her head nurse. And she's really nice. But still, it's not the doctor, you know? And all they would do is up my Zoloft. I mean, we were upping it like 25 milligrams increments every week, and it still wasn't working. But that was all they were going to give me. So eventually the Zoloft made me go all dark and twisty, which it does because I just don't have a good reaction to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I was not in a good place. Never really wanted, I wasn't suicidal, but I was much worse than I had been. And that was when, you know, the whole cutting thing started. I guess, right? Maybe? I don't know. Yeah, it was that month. September is when I started going all dark and twisty. So I stopped and go off cold turkey because I couldn't deal with it anymore. And because when I called my OB's office, they said, well, you're no longer in our care, so you just need to go to the emergency room from now on. Oh, okay. No referral to anybody. No referral to any psychiatrist, psychologist, therapist, counselor, nothing. No referrals, no anything. Just, you're not our problem anymore. And that was shocking.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, again, not just before I did all my research and read everything and heard everybody's stories, I thought that I was like one of the only people in the world to go through this. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you are an obstetrician, psychologist. Your job is not only to bring babies into the world, but help take care of the mom. This is part of that. Like, this is a maternal disorder. Like, you are that. You're supposed to take care. And then, you know, after I watched, what did I watch? Oh, I watched When the Bow Breaks.
Oh, good.
When one of the experts mentioned, you know, we think that OBs should be, you know, intuitive, but they're trained to deal with everything down here in the pelvis. They're not trained to deal with up here in the mind. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I can't totally, completely, and let me give her a little bit more grace, because I'm like, you're right. They're not trained to deal with the mind, and they should. They should be trained on this. And this is what, oh, my God. Oh, if I had any sort of power in the world, by one thing, it would be so all of these would be trained with maternal mood disorders, because, yeah, that's just my thing. That's not my big thing. Like, that would solve so many problems for everybody. But, you know, I thought that she just, I was like, well, maybe she just doesn't like me. But again, I was left with no referral, no anything. I was just left with a prescription for Zoloft, which was making things worse and wasn't helping. So then I talked to my primary care physician. I had to go in and get my thyroid checked because I have hypothyroidism and possibly Hashimoto's. We're actually in the process of testing for all that because things are getting worse. Yeah, I went to talk to him and I asked him, and he's like, sure, here's some referrals for you. So I was like, oh, look at that. Like, all I had to do was ask once. That was it. Once.
Right.
It was over the phone. So I didn't call them because, again, I was worried about this whole thing. If I went and talked to anybody, they would take my case. So I refused to go see anybody, which hindsight is the dumbest thing you can do because what you need to go do is go see someone. But, you know, I was more afraid of losing my kids. So I would rather suffer with this than lose my kids. That was what it came down to. So I had to choose. between my own happiness or my kids, and I would choose my kids every time. But I didn't realize that while I'm in the state that I am, they're also not thriving optimally like they should be, you know, because I'm not functioning on all cylinders, and, you know, it's just, yeah. So anyway, my OB is, she's fantastic for delivery postpartum, though, forget about it. So I think if I ever am blessed with another child, which I'm nowhere near, even, no, just no, but hypothetically speaking, I would use her for the delivery and then have somebody else on standby for postpartum because it's just horrible. The care is just horrible. Postpartum-wise. Anyway, so, yeah, so basically from October to December, it's kind of like a stagnancy. Nothing really happened drastic that changed. I was still in the same kind of downy dumps that I was. I was still anxious. Still, I guess, as in January, I had a very low point. I was getting no help from anybody. I finally went into my OB, and I said, you need to give me something else because I can't get in with any see anybody until 6 to 8 weeks down the line. She prescribed me Wellbutrin, which did help. But it, you know, wasn't until after a little ways, you know, because they take a while to work. Then I called a mental hospital, I guess to call it. And I was going to go check myself in if I wasn't going to get help. I was that low that I was sure if I wasn't going to get help, that I was going to just drive my car off the road. Because, and I guess I should mention this, throughout the whole time, I could see myself, just myself in the car, driving off the road into a telephone pole. And that would, you know, I wasn't suicidal, but that was what I was afraid I was going to do. And at this point in January, I was just so sick of the suffering that I was sure I was going to drive myself off into a telephone pole. So I told my boss, I said, hey, I'm going to go, if they don't give me any medication, I said, I'm going to go check myself into this this program that they have for women. It's not specifically a postpartum program, but it's a program for women in general, but they also deal with postpartum mood disorders, which is kind of nice. Ironically, also run by the same hospital that I was in when I was 16. Oh, well. I was totally ready to go do that because I just didn't know what else to do at this point. And, they prescribed me the Wellbutrin, and I've been taking that, and it seems to be helping. Sorry for rambling for so long. Good Lord, I didn't even realize it was an hour and 42. But, it seems to be helping, but I'm still not better, you know, still a work in progress. This whole past week leading up to the interview, everybody could tell, they're like, hey, you're kind of, you know, not okay again. And I was like, yeah, I said, I think it's just because, well, writing all this stuff out, like you said, writing all this stuff out, you know, you're kind of reliving it again. I said, plus I'm just nervous about telling everybody, you know, kind of like your deepest, darkest secret, you know, kind of deal. But, you know, I'm significantly better than I was. I went an entire month. The entire month of March was fantastic. Like, I had no issues. My rage is much better controlled. Now I just yell at her when she, like, pulls him off the bed or something because she's trying to help me get him ready to go. So, you know, valid yelling. Like, oh, right. My God, pull him off the bed. But, I mean, it's still a work in progress, but, okay, I'm getting there, but it's, you know, slow and steady wins the race kind of deal, and
And as we, you know, before we wrap things up, how is it, you're 22 years old now?
Yes.
So how is it being a younger mom? Is it, do any of your friends, contemporaries have kids yet, or are you, like, the pioneer there?
I'm kind of, like, the only one, so, it's a little bit of an adjustment, because they can all go out and do stuff, like, hey, we're going to go out this weekend and go, you know, whitewater rafting, or whatever, or float the river. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, so have fun. They're like, hey, do you want to come? And then it's like, it takes them a minute, and they're like, oh, sorry.
I'm sure
it's a little bit, my freedom is lost, but it's not. You know, because I'd rather spend time with my kids than go whitewater rafting. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's kind of like a trade-off.
Well, you'll just, you know, you'll be free when your friends have kids.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to Paris.
Yes, let's go, guys.
Well, is there anything we should hit on before we wrap up? Or you're sort of a work in progress, it sounds like.
Yeah, still just, I mean, I am, compared to January, I am a million times better than I was. Like, I'm out of the deep, darkiness. Now it's just kind of like the haze, and where you're kind of underwater.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you like, I'm coming up for air more often, I guess, is how I would put it. Like, I'm not drowning so horribly. You know, I'm spending a lot of time somewhat above water. So.
Well, yeah. I hope maybe we can have you back in the show in a year or two and hear how you're doing.
Yeah, that would be great.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Rachel.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
So that's it for this week. Thank you, Rachel, for sharing so much of your journey. As she mentioned, it's only a few months since she's been taking Wellbutrin and starting to feel better. So I'm sure we'll have Rachel back on the show to give us an update on how she's doing in like 6 months or a year, you know, whatever works for Rachel and wherever her journey takes her. And I know we'll all be rooting for her to just make a full recovery from the darkness. I think she's going to be a really powerful advocate for moms who are going to follow in her wake and struggling. She is like shining the light for them. Show notes will be available at ppdadventures.com. It might take me a couple days. I'm trying to get it done right now, but you know, there's a toddler resisting bedtime right now and, you know, life the way it is. But hopefully show notes will be available at ppdadventures.com. If not, the day this episode drops within like 2 days. So head over there and sign up for the newsletter so that you can get the link for the free copy of the ebook. And the ebook being my memoir, which is available now on Amazon. Yay! I can't get over that. I'm giddy. I'm an author. I'm a published author. I was a writer a few days ago, but now I'm a published author. And, you know, it's the ultimate time of case of taking some real shit lemons of postpartum depression, and I turned it into the most delicious lemonade I could in that book and realizing my dreams of publishing a book. So thank you for all of you who have been listening. And thank you for anyone who's heading out to buy the book, supporting my work. Postpartum depression and all maternal mood disorders are incredibly lonely and isolating, but with proper help and support, you can and will make a full recovery. I love you, and I hope you have a wonderful week.